Hello, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun for Thursday, August 27th, 2026. I'm Flagstaff volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey, and today our front page articles include Bateman gets 24 more years in prison, teacher looking to keep FALA campus spirit alive, Bill Williams mountain work still a high priority, and father-son duo keeping music tangible through vinyls. And we'll go back up to the top of the page here and start with the one that's title is Coconino County Judge Sentences Ex-FLDS Leader Samuel Bateman to 24 more years in prison. And this was written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun Staff reporter. A former leader of the Fundamentalist Church of Latter-day Saints, FLDS, already convicted on federal charges, was sentenced to an additional 24 years in prison for three state-level counts of felony child abuse on Tuesday, August 25th, in Coconino County Superior Court. Samuel Bateman, 50, will be required to serve the sentence consecutive to the 50-year federal sentence already imposed upon him less than 2 years ago. Barring any unforeseen reversals, the self-proclaimed prophet will almost certainly spend the remainder of his life in prison. If he were ever released, he would be required to remain on federal probation until his death. Judge Joshua Steinledge, pronouncing the sentence, said he believed it was absolutely appropriate for Bateman's sentences to run consecutively, in recognition of the unique and separate harms and dangers involved in the state indictment. Bateman was convicted by a jury in June for endangering three young girls by transporting them alongside the highway through Flagstaff in an unventilated cargo trailer, lacking seatbelts or any other safety features. That incident occurred in August 2022 and turned out to be the catalyst leading to his subsequent arrest by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, after he panicked and instructed his followers to delete evidence of other criminal activity. Bateman lived in the FLDS-dominated community of Colorado City Hilldale, on the Arizona-Utah border. After the arrest and incarceration of FLDS leader Warren Jeffs, who was convicted for aggravated sexual assault against a child, Bateman began to make his own claims of divine revelation. To gather his own small cadre of followers, and to demand that they surrender their wives and daughters to him. He eventually claimed at least 20 wives, half of them minors as young as 9, and sexually abused the children over a period of multiple years, sometimes directing his adult followers to do the same. This is pretty hard to read. Federal prosecutors ultimately charged Bateman with obstruction of justice, conspiracy to transport minors for criminal sexual activity, conspiracy to travel between states for illicit sexual conduct with minors, production of child pornography, and more. They described him as the leader of an interstate child sexual abuse ring that spanned numerous states and victimized at least 10 underage girls. After pleading guilty to conspiracy to commit transportation of a minor for criminal sexual activity and conspiracy to commit kidnapping and receiving two concurrent 50-year prison sentences in December 2024, Bateman returned to Coconino County to stand trial for the technically separate allegations of child abuse. The jurors who heard his case returned a verdict in potentially record time, only about half an hour, after 4 days of proceedings in which Bateman, representing himself, effectively admitted to all of the factual elements of the county's indictment. He acknowledged that he was driving a truck, that there were minors under his care riding in the trailer attached to that truck, and that he knew they were in there. Attorneys involved in the case had made a strenuous effort to keep the trial proceedings focused narrowly on the events of August 28, 2022. Despite Bateman's occasional allusions to his prophetic pretensions. But that changed dramatically at sentencing, where the victims and their relatives spoke extensively about the broader context of a manipulation and abuse in which the trailer incident occurred. Bateman spoke very briefly at the opening of the hearing. "Really, the only thing I have to say is that I love these dear people with all of my heart, and I had no intention in the whole entire world of harming them," he said. He made no specific requests regarding his sentence or arguments regarding mitigation. Bateman represented himself throughout the proceedings with limited advisory assistance from the public defender's office. "I'm here today to speak about more than the specific events of this trial. Naomi Bistlein, who previously appeared in a Netflix series about Bateman, began her statement. She described the physical and sexual trauma Bateman inflicted upon her and others, and the ongoing process of coping with those events. I survived him, and I'm still learning to live beyond what he did to me," Bistlein said. Steinlage clarified after Bistlein's remarks, "The court is sentencing Mr. Bateman based on his actions on August 28, 2022, and not on the basis of any of the other conduct described by the victims. But he emphasized that all of the victims were free to say what they wish, even if not directly applicable to the determination of Bateman's state prison term." Throughout the succession of speakers who followed, Bateman remained facing forward, without acknowledging or meeting the gaze of any of his victims. All of them urged Steinlage to impose the maximum possible sentence allowed by law. "I'm afraid of what Samuel will do if given another opportunity to hurt people," one said. "I believe he has demonstrated a pattern of manipulation and harm, and I believe that allowing him to return to society too soon creates a danger to other people." Julia Johnson, Julia Johnson, who secretly provided information to the FBI during their investigation of Bateman, spoke at length and at times in the manner of a sermon, addressing both the court and Bateman. "I've had to live with the devastating reality that he and his men followers broke down my conscience to such a low, insane, and incriminating state through manipulation, humiliation, deception, betrayal, and abuse, both sexually and verbally," Johnson said. "Then he stole all my daughters right before my eyes and subjected them to the same abuse, depriving me of a voice of my own in the role of motherhood, leaving me to envy the corpse. She recounted Bateman's demands for complete obedience, along with his murderous threats of blood atonement against anyone that refused or even hesitated to obey his sick commands. She described him as a thief of money, homes, and vehicles, of innocence and purity, of dignity and chastity, of self-respect and confidence. Turning to Bateman, Johnson said, "Most will choose not to look at you or give you another second of their time. But I'm going to look at you straight on and speak the truth to your face. You are a coward to refuse to acknowledge your own doing, and you know you have done wickedly and evil. You refuse to practice what you preached to us continually when you would say, 'Just confess and tell the truth. Just say I've done the wrong damn thing.'" Like other speakers, she expressed fear of what Bateman might do if freed. "This man should never be let back into society to walk the earth unattended," Johnson said. "He shows by his actions to this day that he most assuredly would do the same things again to someone else." Some of the speakers did specifically address the trailer incident that provoked the trial. The adoptive mother of one of the three girls who was riding in the trailer told the court, "She was completely dependent upon the adults around her to keep her safe. The fact that they rode in that trailer for so long and in such dangerous conditions is completely insane. No one in their right mind would have thought that would be okay." And one of the three girls who rode in the trailer that day, trying to hold the improperly latched rear door closed with her fingers, said, "I clearly see now that riding in the trailer was reckless and very dangerous. It only felt safe at the time," she explained, "in comparison to being in Bateman's line of sight, subject to the whims of his anger." In a pre-sentencing memorandum, County Prosecutor Eric Ruchensky asked the court to find in aggravation that Bateman has two prior felony convictions and that the trailer incident involved substantial emotional harm to the victims. He repeated those points at the sentencing hearing and noted that no mitigation had been presented. Those were girls that he was taking care of. It was his responsibility to keep them safe, and he didn't do that, Ruchensky said. Steinlage accepted, as aggravating factors, Bateman's prior felony convictions and the tremendous emotional harm to the victims, which he added would give a great deal of weight. He also said Bateman had violated a position of trust with regard to the victims. Since no mitigating factors were argued, Steinlage imposed the maximum sentence of 8 years per count to be served at 85% with credit for 430 days of pre-sentence incarceration in the Coconino County Jail. There was some discussion during the proceedings of materials to be prepared for the Arizona Court of Appeals, indicating that Bateman may intend to appeal the outcome. Bateman has also evidently not abandoned his claims to divine authority. The state's pre-sentence memorandum noted that Bateman has continued to contact and attempt to contact minors from the Coconino County Detention Facility, which is in violation of the terms of his federal sentence. One of the victims expressed sadness and pain over the influence he continues to exert over her mother's and sister's, a reminder that despite everything, a dwindling group of believers continue to view the disheveled, handcuffed man in the county jail uniform as God's messenger on earth. Others, however, are doing their best to move on, as much as it is possible to move on from such a deeply traumatizing situation. One of the girls he abused, now 16, said Tuesday that she forgave Bateman not because she believed his conduct merited it, but because she did not want his past to control her future. "I am trying to move forward and build a life that I should have been allowed to have all along," she told the court. "I am still here, and I am working toward a future that belongs to me." And that article was called "Coconino County Judge Sentences Ex-FLDS Leader Samuel Bateman to 24 More Years in Prison." And this was written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun staff reporter. Our second front page article today is called "Flagstaff Teacher Leading Effort to Purchase Fala Campus for Community Arts Education." And this is written by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. A former Flagstaff Arts and Leadership Academy, FALA, teacher is leading a campaign to try and purchase the school's campus for use as an arts education and studio space. FALA's board voted to close the school this past spring due to financial challenges that were caused in part by falling enrollment. The campus off of Fort Valley Road ceased operations at the end of the 2025-26 school year and was listed for sale over the summer. FALA first started in 1996 on the grounds of the Museum of Northern Arizona, before moving to its final campus in 2010. A listing for the 2.59-acre property said it includes 21,370 square feet of indoor space between the seven structures on the site. A price is not specified in the listing, though Betsy Hamill, who is leading the effort to repurpose FALA's campus, said the property costs $3.8 million. As of last week, Hamill said the effort had raised enough for the down payment she planned to offer, though she was continuing to fundraise in order to begin operations as sustainably as possible and account for any unexpected expenses early on. Hamill, who taught music and dance at FALA for 15 years before its closure, is working with a nonprofit she hopes to start for the campus reuse called the Flagstaff Arts Collective. She had plans to make an offer on the property in late August and said she hoped to begin offering classes in October, with a full opening of the space as the Flagstaff Arts Collective in January, if everything goes according to plan. "We're watching places in Flagstaff close, specifically arts institutions, and it's a reflection of the times in a way because funding has changed," Hamill said. "It's a win for Flagstaff when we maintain and create a new art space where people can connect and grow together and learn and experience the things through arts that you don't experience in any other area." She said her hope for the site is to be a dedicated space for the arts in Flagstaff, offering after-school dance, music, theater, and art lessons for middle and high schoolers, as well as classes for adults, and renting studio space and recording time to artists. The sky's the limit in terms of what you can do with the arts and how creative we can be to really foster a sense of true community, she said. Other possible ideas included summer camps, yoga or Pilates classes, screenings of independent films, culinary classes, outdoor markets, or other collaborations with the surrounding neighborhood. Hamill said the classes would be taught by members of the collective, including some former FALA teachers, and that the space's offerings would be determined collaboratively. She also said the plans would be developed with affordability in mind to ensure the classes offered are widely accessible. Hamill said the idea came to her when she was working on a recording on campus in June and saw the for sale signs being put up. I went into the hallway and I looked around and I was like, this can't end, she said. This space, it has an energy beyond what FALA was. This is an arts and learning and creative and expansive space. She made a video about the campus and posted it to Instagram, which she said received thousands of views, with hundreds of people sending her messages about it. It seemed apparent to me that this was not just a me sadness. This is a collective sadness about a space that has changed so many lives, she said. While the final details of how the space will be used and the financial plan for its operations will be worked out amongst the collective after the site's purchase, if they are able to complete it. Oh my gosh, this is a run-on sentence. Hamill had already outlined a plan to ensure sustainable operations while paying artists fairly and offering classes at an affordable rate. She said she used conservative estimates when making that plan. Hamill said the funding would likely be through a mix of income from classes and space rentals. She estimated that 25% of proceeds from classes would go toward operations, with the artist leading the program receiving the remaining 75%. Grants and donations. She also said her hope was to establish multiple endowments for the collective over the next 5 years as another measure toward financial sustainability. More information about this effort can be found at flagstaffartscollective.com. And that article was called Flagstaff Teacher Leading Effort to Purchase FALA Campus for Community Arts Education. And it was written by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. Moving along to our third front page article. It's called Bill Williams Mountain Work Still a High Priority. And this is written by Calvin Shoemaker, Williams Grand Canyon News. County officials recently briefed the Williams City Council on efforts to continue reducing hazardous fire fuels on Bill Williams Mountain. Coconino County's District 3 Supervisor, Tammy Ontiveros, called wildfire and post-wildfire flooding the number one threat to communities across Coconino County. According to Ontiveros, a study from the Economic Policy Institute at Northern Arizona University found that post-wildfire flooding on Bill Williams Mountain could result in an economic impact of $945 million in today's dollars. The Coconino County Board of Supervisors, which oversees the county's flood control district as its board of directors, has invested $4.4 million in forest restoration work on the mountain to date, with $2.8 million to be invested next year, Ontiveros said. Coconino County Forest Restoration Director Jay Smith said 625 acres of the mountain's steep slope areas have been treated to date, in addition to nearly 500 acres around the base of the mountain. Since 2019, $20.5 million have been invested in forest restoration on Bill Williams Mountain, including $13.7 million from the Forest Service and $2.4 million from partners such as the Nature Conservancy, National Forest Foundation, and the Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management. This is an ongoing project that our board of directors is continuing to prioritize, Smith said. One of the reasons we wanted to be here was to let you all know that this is still a high priority for our flood control district and our board. A thinning project for up to 200 acres of the land on the north side of the mountain began this month and could run through the spring, while helicopter logging is planned to start back up on over 200 acres of steep slope terrain in 2027, Smith said. Large-scale restoration work on the south side of the mountain will start later this year, with a web page launching soon that will detail the project's overall progress. The board of directors has been very clear that they want to be proactive, Smith said. The science tells us what we are doing is going to work. We know the benefits. The return on investment is there. Smith added that crews are focused on removing the dead and down timber from Bill Williams Mountain in order to allow the Forest Service to utilize prescribed fires in the future. We want the Forest Service to be able to put prescribed fire back on the mountain, Smith said. We need to reintroduce fire, but under a very manageable system. And so the only way to do that is to get the mountain back to a state where they feel comfortable putting fire back on the mountain. Williams City Council meetings are held at 7 p.m. on the second and fourth Thursdays of each month at City Hall. View meeting agendas, packets, and minutes at williamsaz.gov. And that article was called Bill Williams Mountain Work Still a High Priority by Calvin Shoemaker, Williams Grand Canyon News. And now the fourth front page story, and its title is Father-Son Duo, Keeping Music Tangible Through Vinyls. And this was written by Calliope J. Ludeker, Sun staff reporter. Eric Quorum had no idea what was in store for him when called into the owner's office at Arizona Music Pro AMP. The music aficionado and business major, he held the title of shipping and receiving manager when the 30-year proprietor announced his retirement. Let's see. At Arizona Music Pro, okay. The store's inventory was set to be liquidated by the end of the year. I took a look at what I was doing with my life and realized this might be the perfect opportunity to do something I actually love, Quorum said. He decided to take a leap. He volunteered to take over the store, jumping headfirst into the nuances of brick and mortar ownership. The smooth transition was a testament to his patience. By his own account, he signed the papers on a Friday and was in the office the following Saturday. I'm drinking from a fire hose. I would say it's definitely coming with its challenges, Quorum said. School doesn't ever teach you to be a business owner. They just teach you more or less to be a good corporate worker. Besides countless musical wares, AMP was home to a dusty storage shed. The rarely used expansion planted a seed in Coram's imagination. In his youth, one of Coram's favorite pastimes was rummaging through collections at local record stores. The days of Dag Nabbit's and warehouse music were long gone. I remember those places. And Coram saw an unfulfilled demand. If I wasn't overwhelmed enough with just figuring out how to run this 30-year-old business, I decided to also add a record shop on top of it. He added with a chuckle, having grown up in the generation of burning CDs and sharing them with friends, he sees a value in the physical media, which has fallen by the wayside in recent years. We, as humans, as human beings, still like to hold and touch the things we have, Coram said. I want to support the pushback on these massive corporate entities blatantly telling us we don't own anything and we're going to like it. That's something that's irked me for a long time. Coram expects vinyl to make a comeback. With an overwhelming amount of music saturating streaming services and artificial intelligence providing unprecedented forays into the world of composition, walking into a traditional record store can be a breath of fresh air. To be honest, I don't think I've ever been given a download link or a USB drive that really made me feel something, Coram said. It's always been physical media, whether it be from a band that I played with or the first album that I got when I was going to the warehouse, which was Primus's Sea of Cheese. It's one of the first albums I ever bought. It's so much more special to have, for example, the artist sign something for you and physically be like, here you go. It's a gift in itself, just having something physical to listen to and look at. He points out that albums can make an impression and open the door to communications with bands who hand them out. While many artists rely on social media promotion, Coram insists playing shows and going on tour are the most powerful forms of press. He occasionally opens space for touring bands to perform in AMP. Having been on tour through half the country myself, I know it really just takes one venue that treats the bands right to make them want to keep going, Coram said. You get burned a lot with these big professional venues. He recalls playing an empty venue in Tacoma, Washington with one other band. The sound guy, hosts, and the venue owners had such a good time with us, they started talking about us to everybody else who went in there, Coram said. All of a sudden, we started seeing these plays coming out of Tacoma, even though there was nobody at the show. Another driving force behind the record store was Coram's own father, Lester. Lester had worked in construction his entire life. Coram wanted to put him in a better role for his health and safety. Lester's last construction project was to turn the old storage shed into Sunday Morning Records and Things. And that's morning with a U. Once complete, Coram employed him at the very business he helped to build. Lester thrives in the position, chatting with customers and losing weight. He is joined by his dog, Luca, who is the store's mascot. He spent so much of his life busting his butt, working every single day to raise me and keep my mom going. And now it's my turn to take care of my dad, Coram said. He was a great pick for the position anyway, because he's such a wealth of information when it comes to discography, albums, and concerts. He is, bar none, the best guy in the store for it. Quorum envisioned a space that was bright, bold, and crowded with merchandise. He found himself inspired by stores like Spencer's, minus the gaudiness and shock value. So far, Sunday Morning Records and Things has been well received by the public, but Quorum struggles with marketing the new place. It really is a burden to get on my phone for 10 minutes and make a post, because it's like I've got to change my entire mindset from Mr. Stern, serious business guy to like, hey, come and look at my cool stuff guy, Quorum said. It's really hard to do that at the end of the day, but we're getting there. One step is a grand opening celebration, which Quorum has scheduled for Friday at 3 p.m., formalizing the store's months-long soft open. In addition to vinyl, Quorum welcomed a new luthier, Jesse Garland, to AMP. Garland formerly worked for the Gibson Acoustic Program in Wisconsin and is a master when it comes to guitar repair. If you're not the kind of person crazy enough to like how much whatever you're doing sucks sometimes, you're not going to be doing a good job and you're not going to make it in the long run, Quorum said. You have to truly love what you are doing. And that article was called Father-Son Duo Keeping Music Tangible Through Vinyls by Calliope J. Ludeker, Sun staff reporter. And just a reminder, you're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds programming is directed to those who cannot use print material due to a disability. Listen to our live streams and learn how you can support us at the website sunsounds.org. You can also get our stream and on-demand programs with the Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android devices. Now we're moving along to the, we're moving on to the local page where we have an obituary to read and some news briefs. The obituary is for Deanne Barfield, 74, of Flagstaff, Arizona, who passed away peacefully on June 15, 2026, in Flagstaff, Arizona, surrounded by friends and family. Deanne graduated from Amarillo High School in 1970. She went on to attend Columbia College and Stevens College in Missouri, and later pursued a degree in design from Arizona State University. Deanne had a deep love for animals and treasured each of the pets she cared for throughout her life. She especially enjoyed the outdoors, finding peace and joy in hiking and exploring the beautiful landscapes of Arizona. She was also a talented sketch artist and photographer, often capturing the quiet beauty she saw in the world around her. Over the years in Flagstaff, Deanne built many meaningful friendships and created a life there that she truly loved. She will be remembered for her creativity, her sense of humor, her affection for animals and nature. Most of all, she will be remembered for the warmth she shared so freely and the joy she brought to those around her. Her unique spirit touched many lives. She is survived by her sister, Amanda Barfield Williams of Kerrville, Texas, and her brother, Borden Barfield of Fairview, Texas. She was preceded in death by her brother, John Barfield, and her parents, Carolyn and B.R. Barfield of Amarillo, Texas. Our family wishes to thank Highgate Senior Living and Northern Arizona Hospice for all their kindness and loving care. The family suggests memorials be made to High Country Humane Animal Shelter or Northern Arizona Hospice in Deanne's memory. Now we're moving along to some news briefs. And the first one's called State Treasurer's Office Asking for Submissions to AZ-529 Essay Contest. The Arizona, and these are written by Daily Sun staff, unless I tell you otherwise. The Arizona State Treasurer's Office, in collaboration with Arizona's Education Savings Plan, AZ-529, will begin accepting entries for its 7th annual statewide essay writing contest on September 3rd. Fifth and sixth grade students from across Arizona can submit an essay answering the question, "What is your dream job, and how do you plan on achieving it in the future?" Submissions can be made through October 11th. A total of $10,580 will be awarded to 20 winners. That goes toward an AZ-529 plan to help save for their educational aspirations beyond high school. One winner will be selected from each of Arizona's 15 counties, and at least one winner each representing a district, charter, private school, tribal school, and home school will be selected. Winners will be honored by Treasurer Kimberly Yee, during a special ceremony at the state capitol in November. Parents or guardians of the winners will be responsible for setting up an AZ-529 account if an account does not already exist. Entries must be submitted starting online at az529.gov/essay contest or through direct mail. For more information about AZ-529, visit az529.gov. Next, we have a brief titled Flag Shakes Presenting the Taming and a Room in the Castle, beginning September 17th. The Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival will present The Taming and a Room in the Castle by Lauren Gunderson and directed by Flag Shakes Artistic Director Amy Bjorklund this fall. The duo reimagined the women of Shakespeare by offering perspectives on their lives. With funding from the National Endowment for the Arts, The Taming will also feature an educational display created by local scholars and artists related to the U.S. Constitution and feature additional community engagement activities such as post-show talkbacks after select performances. The Taming, loosely based on William Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew. The witty three-woman comedy invites audiences to laugh, listen, and recognize themselves in the chaos of democracy. As described by Flag Shakes, a beauty pageant becomes an unlikely crossroads of ambition, ideology, and identity. Amid the glitter and spectacle, Catherine isn't just competing for a crown, she's rewriting history. The other one, A Room in the Castle, reframes the women of Hamlet into a bold, heartbreaking, and unexpectedly funny drama filled with resilience and hope. Set entirely within Ophelia's bedchamber, A Room in the Castle asks, how does a woman endure the treacherous court of Denmark? Ophelia, her loyal handmaid, and Queen Gertrude face the fallout of a volatile prince's behavior and begin to grasp just how perilous life in the castle has become. Performances will begin September 18th through October 3rd. All performances will be held at 11 South Beaver Street, number 2. Tickets are available at flag, shakes.org, and pay what you wish tickets are available for each performance. Next news brief is called Relieved. School district gets grant for HVAC improvements at WHS. And this is written by Calvin Showmaker, Williams Grand Canyon News. A major facility upgrade is coming to Williams High School. Williams Unified School District No. 2, WUSD2, has been approved for a $6.4 million building renewal grant by Arizona Schools Facilities Division, SFD, to bring much-needed air conditioning to WHS. Joe Howe, District Facilities Director, says the grant funding will cover the installation of all new ductwork, heaters, and air conditioning units for the high school, its gymnasium, CTE building, and cafeteria. The welding and auto shops are not included in the grant, however. Coconino Community College has said it will contribute to improving that facility as part of its voter-approved bond initiative. The SFD funding is huge for the district, as some classrooms can reach well into the 80s during the hottest part of the school year, says WHS Principal Dr. Connie Hargis, acting superintendent. "We're just so relieved," Hargis said. "It's about 2 months of the year solid that the classrooms are just very difficult to be and learn in." Funded by state tax dollars, the project will take 2 years to complete. Best of all, it comes with no required match by the school district. Howe said most of the work will be completed while students are off campus, and that materials could start arriving before the end of the calendar year. The two leaders thanked the school's community for their patience and the SFD, which has also funded other district improvements over the years. And those were some news briefs. So next, in local news, we're going to read the Ask a Ranger column. Learning more about the Big Sink near Flagstaff, written by Bill Wade, special to the Daily Sun. Editor's note: the final Ask a Ranger column for this year was scheduled to run this week, but a last-minute hiccup meant the content couldn't be approved in time. So here is Coordinator Bill Wade's pick for a classic column that still works today. The AAR column will return for another run next summer. Flagstaff boasts an abundance of sinkholes, courtesy of our extensive local outcrops of Permian-aged Kaibab formation. Well-known local sinkholes include the unnamed ones on the far side of Lower Lake Mary Dam, which prevented Lower Lake Mary from ever filling to its intended level, and the bottomless pit north of East Old Walnut Canyon Road near Continental Park. Like the Lower Lake Mary sinkholes, the bottomless pit occasionally drains a lake. Lake Continental, aka Big Fill Lake, forms whenever the Rio de Flag carries sufficient runoff to back up behind the culverts that carry it under Route 66 and the railroad. Lake Continental most recently formed during the spring runoff this past April, when the bottomless pit performed its usual magic of swallowing enough water to limit local funding, local filling. But to my knowledge, the largest sinkhole in the vicinity of Flagstaff is an unnamed one, herein styled the Big Sink, in the forest north of Highway 180, east of Heart Prairie Road, FS 151, and west of Taylor Spring, northwest Fort Valley, and specifically northwest of the end of North Round Tree Road. With its 70-foot depth, The big sink is large and deep enough that it contains its own little forest, including Douglas firs and abundant aspens, unlike the surrounding ponderosa forest. The floor of the sink also sports abundant snowberry, huckleberry, and honeysuckle. Basalt forms the surrounding lip of the big sink, part of a wide lava flow that emanated from Hart Prairie Shield Volcano Vent a few miles west of the San Francisco Peaks. Basalt does not erode chemically like limestone or other carbonate rocks. Consequently, it's reasonable to assume that the big sink was present in some form before the basalt flow, that it was covered in basalt, but thereafter it swallowed its basalt cap and formed or reformed its present depression shape. This was an impressive feat of erosion. The two likeliest ways this happened are, number one, an exceptionally large cavern in the underlying Kaibab formation collapsed under the added weight of the basalt cap, or more likely, IMHO, number two, the big sink sits atop a deep-seated collapse breccia pipe. Collapse breccia pipes are not uncommon in our region. They originate via cave collapse at depth in the red wall limestone, which propagates upward as overlying sedimentary formations fracture and collapse into the underlying void space. Breccia pipes serve as conduits where water surfaces can descend to deep aquifers, where the mixing of oxygenated surface water and anoxic deep aquifer water frequently promotes metal-rich mineralization. A second striking topographic feature lies close to the big sink, a relatively deep, up to 50 feet, stream channel just upslope of the sinkhole. This stream drains a good portion of Hart Prairie, including the small stream lined with beb willows, as well as runoff from the area of the AZ Snowbowl Complex and Ski Basin. It's normal for streams to incise more deeply where gradients are steeper. But it's curious the way this particular channel flows directly toward the big sink, only to swerve away within the last 10 yards, splitting into multiple shallow channels as it does so. Did this stream once drain directly into the big sink, but alter its course in more recent geologic time? Suggesting a stream channel course change based on proximity may sound arbitrary, a just-so story. And yet, it's difficult to imagine the big sink swallowing its basalt cap and subsiding as deeply as it has during the last 700,000 years. That is the age date of the Shield Volcano and a relatively brief time span geologically. Without a sizable volume of water draining through it, more than simply the direct rainfall. There can be valid reasons for stories to be just so. Bill Wade, a veteran roving ranger, is a retired geologist and former community college prof. The National Park Service, U.S. Forest Service roving rangers volunteer through a unique agreement between the Flagstaff Area National Monuments and the Coconino National Forest to provide interpretive ranger walks and talks in the Flagstaff area each summer. And that article was called Ask a Ranger, Learning More About the Big Sink Near Flagstaff. And it was written by Bill Wade, special to the Daily Sun. And in the short time we have left, I'll read some local community events. Today, the Coconino County Bookmobile will be at Loop Chapter House, and they'll be there from 10:30 till 3:30 p.m. And there will be free music in the square on Thursdays in Heritage Square from 5 to 7 p.m. It says, get ready to groove all summer long with free live music in the heart of downtown Flagstaff. Discover local musicians, grab a to-go coffee, lunch, or dinner from one of your favorite downtown spots, and enjoy a picnic on the square while soaking in the sounds. On August 28th, the Coconino County Bookmobile is going to be at Flagstaff Junior Academy during the school year, and also Basis Academy. And later in the day, we'll be at the Boys and Girls Club. And let's see what else is going to be. There's going to be something called Millennial Summer Live at Fire Creek from 7 to 10 p.m., an Arizona indie rock showcase headlined by Millennial Summer from Phoenix. So there's a lot to do here in Flagstaff. And that's all the time we have for the Arizona Daily Sun. For Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, I'm volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day. Take care.